Well, so far in this series, quite a few of you have listened to talks on Polycarp and Justin and Origen. And as far as we are concerned, the subject of tonight's talk is more important than those three put together. Notice the proviso, as far as we are concerned, because this man is Athanasius. Athanasius had the great privilege of being born into a Christian home. So yet again we have an influential Christian who cannot tell us when he was converted, though converted he was. Probably he was born about 297, and certainly he died in the year 373. So he would be about 76 or 77 when God called him home. His young life was spent in Alexandria, a very cosmopolitan town in Egypt. He was spent in that very well-to-do Christian household that I referred to. He grew up to be quite a small person in stature, but spiritually he was a giant among the many pygmies who existed in those days. By the time he was 23, for instance, he had written a classic book called On the Incarnation of the Word. And if you were studying the incarnation of Christ today, you would be prescribed reading for you. I have a hunch this Athanasius had that journalist's instinct for the power of the pen. The leader of the Catholic, not the Roman Catholic, the Catholic believers in Alexandria at the time, was a man called Alexander, Bishop Alexander. Athanasius, very early on, became his secretary, his advisor, a sort of troubleshooter for him. And all was very peaceful, and everything was going along quite nicely, till one day Alexander preached a sermon to all the ministers gathered together. The sermon had a title, Unity in Trinity. And the minister of the oldest church in Alexandria took strong exception to what Alexander said. His name was Arius. A-R-I-U-S. Arius created an enormous fuss about that sermon. He said, Alexander is a false teacher. And by calling him that, of course, he was in fact saying that he himself believed something different. He believed that Christ was a created being. His view seems to have been that Christ was part God, part man. But he doesn't seem to have realized that who Jesus is absolutely basic to the work Christ came to do. All the Christians here now know very well that a person can save them from their sin only who is both truly God and truly man. So Arius is second-rate God, who, by the way, is very like the God preached by the modern Jehovah's Witnesses, provides a second-rate salvation, or to be more accurate, no salvation at all. Alexander called Arius in to give an explanation. Athanasius was standing there listening to what was going on. And eventually Arius was deposed from the ministry. But the volcanic eruption that followed from that event was enormous. Comedians in theatres told jokes about the divisions among the Christians. The pagans were delighted to see the Christians criticising each other and pulling each other apart. Mobs in favour of Arius went round and pelted the Orthodox. And the glory of Christ was dragged along the gutters. Not only was the whole church worldwide coming apart at the seams over whether Christ was created by the Father, but it seemed to the nominally Christian Emperor Constantine that the whole business was downright unseemly, and he asked for the most important Christians everywhere to assemble at Nicaea. Persecutions. One man had his eye burnt out. There was only a socket. Another man had the sinews of his legs cut off, and he dragged his leg behind him. Another man had only one hand. So these were people who had suffered for Christ, or at least the majority of them had. 318 people gathered at Nicaea to decide, was Arius correct? Well, the true believers in Christ eventually decided that Arius was a heretic. And the Nicene Creed, which is a byproduct of this great meeting of 318 Christians, states quite clearly the truth that Christ is the eternal Son of God, begotten, not created, the second person of the Trinity, and of the same essence and standing as God the Father. Now, soon after that event, Athanasius took Alexander's place in Alexandria, and you would hope that now he would have a bit of peace. But the trouble was only just beginning. The Council of Nicaea seemed to have settled nothing. Every device of the devil seemed now to be unleashed at Athanasius. And, of course, the orthodoxy that Athanasius stood for. To give you an idea of the sort of thing that went on, here's just one example. The Arians went round with a wooden box, and they had a man's hand, a dead man's hand in it, black and withered. And they said, that's the hand of the Christian Arsenius. Athanasius arranged to have him murdered. And he uses that in black magic rites. And some of the mud began to stick. So Athanasius finally found Arsenius, the man whose hand was supposed to be in the box, and when the court case came up, Arsenius came in the court and said, I was bribed by the Arians to go and hide while the court case was on, and I've got two hands. He held them up. But you see, if he hadn't come out of hiding, Athanasius could quite easily have been discredited. The sufferings of Athanasius included 5 long, heart-breaking exiles. His life really must have been one long misery. His heart must have been broken when pagans couldn't tell the difference between real Christians and Arians, who were condoning massacres and who persecuted the Orthodox Christians with a real fury. It was Athanasius against the world, and the world against Athanasius. And that happened on several critical occasions. One fellow believer said, Athanasius is like a lighthouse standing on a rock among the wreck-strewn waves. And another man who knew him said, his secret was that when in his very earliest youth, and that means well under 18, he was inflamed by a passionate love for the person of Jesus Christ and what Jesus Christ had done for him in saving him. Athanasius breathed the atmosphere of hate, but he lived a life full of love. A smaller man, either intellectually or spiritually, would have gone under. If we could have lived just a, if he could have lived just a few more years than he did, he would have seen Arianism begin to wane away. But it was not to be. Fortunately, the full deity of Christ was settled by the second of the great ecumenical councils, ecumenical in the best sense, and the gospel was saved. And God, I believe, raised up Athanasius for that purpose. Now, how does Athanasius speak to us here in 1992? Well, first note that at that council of Nicaea, much of the discussion at it among those 300-odd delegates settled on one word. That word means of the same essence, homoousios. If Christ was of the same essence as God the Father, that shut out Arius, who wanted Christ to be called as of a similar essence to God the Father. Now today, some Christians, perhaps including a few here, are going round saying, it doesn't matter about being precise about your Christian doctrine. Athanasius is telling you it is very important to be precise about your Christian doctrine. It is plain wrong to go round saying that practical things matter more. Both of them are important, indeed essential. If Athanasius could be here now, he would be saying, if Christ is either Lord of all or he is not Lord at all, he would not have a middle way. And secondly, we should need that sort of determination, that sort of courage to go on elevating the Son of God, Jesus Christ, crucified and risen. Have you trusted in the eternal Son of God, crucified and risen, as Athanasius did, for your personal salvation? The answer can only be yes or no. There isn't any middle ground.